Oh, here's one. I don't know if you and I talked about this, but for PJP pneumonia, going back real quick, when do you add steroids to the TMPSMX? Did you see that in UWorld? Do you see a
No.
couple questions on that? No. So look, obviously TMPSMX is treatment, but you add steroids if the AA gradient is greater than 35, or the PO2 is under 70 millimeters mercury.
Even if I did see it, I don't remember
Maybe
anything. It's just too much.
I saw two questions on that. It may have actually been in UWorld for step three, but I mean, by all means, the exam's becoming more like step one's becoming more like step two, step two's becoming more like step three. So, but you add steroids in that situation.
Great.
All right. Now, achalasia, what can you tell me about the like presentation versus a Zenker diverticulum?
Achalasia, you have dysphagia to solids and liquids. Zenkers, it's more, you regurgitate food more, and they have foul breath.
Okay, so halitosis is classically Zenker, right? And might say you're regurgitating undigested food, as you pointed out. Good. And they might hear a gurgling sound when they drink fluids. Classic Zenker. Achalasia, because it's neurogenic, you're gonna have dysphagia to solids and liquids. Okay. Immediate dysphagia to solids and liquids when you have a achalasia. If they were to tell you, for instance, that a patient has dysphagia to solids that progresses to dysphagia to liquids as well, what's that?
That's esophageal cancer, isn't
Great. So what's the next best step in diagnosis for if you get a presentation of Zenker slash achalasia, we're not sure.
Barium swallow.
Good. And as you saw, that's on the NVME, right? I think there were a couple questions on NVME 8 on that. So the thing is, if they were to ask you what's the most accurate diagnostic modality for achalasia, you know it's esophageal manometry, but on the NVME slash USMLE, they want barium as the next best step. And then you would confirm with a manometry. Okay. And in CREST syndrome, on manometry, they're going to have decreased esophageal peristalsis and decreased lower esophageal sphincter tone. And in someone with CREST syndrome, what kind of lung pathology can they get?
They can get pulmonary hypertension, but they can also get interstitial lung disease.
Great. So they'll get the interstitial lung disease causing the pulmonary hypertension, right?
Yeah.
Good. And then that pulmonary hypertension is going to lead to what?
That's going to lead to core pulmonary.
Great. What's your pulmonary capillary wedge pressure in cor pulmonale?
It's going to be normal.
Good. Why is it normal?
Because core pulmonary is right-sided heart failure.
Right-sided heart failure due to a lung pathology, right? Cor pulmonale.
Yeah.
Whereas pulmonary capillary wedge pressure tells you have a left heart problem. So if your pulmonary capillary wedge pressure is increased in the setting of right heart failure, it means that you have left heart failure. It means you cannot eliminate left heart failure as the cause of your right heart failure. I reiterate this point because, as you know, PCWP has been showing up a lot in questions. So if you get a vignette where someone has low blood pressure following let's say a car accident, let's say there's a car accident, there's bruising over the rib cage, and they have decreased blood pressure and their PCWP is elevated, that's going to be cardiogenic shock, right? Not hypovolemic shock.
Yeah, it's been showing up a lot in the so.
Let's say you've got a 62-year-old man with sickle cell. I'm going to ask you a weird question right now. You have a 62-year-old man who has sickle cell and he has polyuria and the urinalysis shows high protein, no blood. 4+ protein, no blood. He's got a little bit of petal edema. His abdomen's distended. His abdomen is diffusely tender. And he's got a fever of 102. Next best step in diagnosis for the fever.
That's a really weird question. I'm just thinking no blood people pull your ear. So, well, I mean, how do you even check if it's
okay, so first of all, what's the most common cause of nephrotic syndrome in sickle cell? Focal segmental glomerulosclerosis. Okay.
Okay.
So he's got nephrotic syndrome.
Yes.
And he's got, as evidenced by pedal edema, and he's got a distended abdomen. Why does he have a distended abdomen? Ascites.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Okay, so he's nephrotic syndrome with ascites. And he's got a fever. And it's the abdomen's tender. What is that?
Oh, what is that? SBP?
Correct.
That's insane. I just want to tell you that.
So. Okay, so spontaneous bacterial peritonitis, right? So as you know, the three ways they're going to ask that is they're going to give you a patient with cirrhosis, like let's say with hemochromatosis, right? And you just have portal hypertension leading to ascites, or you've got, let's say, a patient who had peritoneal dialysis or is undergoing peritoneal dialysis, or you've got a patient who has nephrotic syndrome. They could give you like a kid who has minimal change disease who has nephrotic syndrome, right? And then you've got, I think that was on one of the newer PEDS form 6 or something. But that's going to give you an SBP. How do you diagnose spontaneous bacterial peritonitis?
The syntesis. It's paracentesis.
Good. Paracentesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like pericardiocentesis, but paracentesis, yep, good, is aspiration of the peritoneal cavity. So they're going to want Gram stain of the fluid. That can be an answer.
Okay.
Or you want to look for greater than 250 white cells per eye powered field.
250, you said, or I think it's 250, right?
250. I did say 250, yes. And what antibiotic would you give to treat?
I would give Ceftriaxone.
Good.